waiting, sleepless, on the glacis of the hospital fortifications, Gordon had heard the opening volleys of the battle, and seen the rocket flares sailing up from the harbour into the night sky. He had roused his gunners. They limbered up the second Gatling and ran it through the alleyways and byways of the city. It took them 8.5 minutes to reach the harbour and unlimber the Gatling in the empty emplacement that had been prepared for it. True to his nature, Gordon had timed them. He nodded approval and thrust the Hunter back into his pocket. "Number two gun, open fire," he grated, and the monstrous thunder of the 6 rotating barrels smothered the frenzied war cries of the dervish. A moving sheet of fire swept relentlessly across the revetment of the creek. From this angle he caught them in left flank and rear. His fire tumbled them off the walls like ripe apples from a wind-shaken tree. Most lost their weapons in the fall. Those who rose to their feet again were hurled forward by the press of bodies still surging up the creek and were trapped against the footwall of the fortifications. "Back! Go back! It is over!" shouted those in the forefront. "Forward!" screamed those coming up from the beach. "For God and his ever-victorious Mahdi!" The creek became a massive logjam of bodies, packed so tightly that even the dead were held upright by their comrades. Penrod could not witness all this taking place while he struggled with the jammed bolt. At last he forced the point of the bayonet behind the lug of the cam and hammered on the hilt with his palm. He ignored the pain and shouted at Sergeant Khalid, "Back up the crank!" Khalid heaved anti-clockwise on the handle, taking the pressure off the cam, and suddenly the lug flew back with a clanging force that would have taken off Penrod's thumb had he not jerked it away. The crushed and deformed cartridge case flew clear. As Khalid released the handle, the next round dropped from the hopper and was fed smoothly into the breech. The bolt cocked with a sweet, almost musical clank. "Number one gun cocked and ready, Sergeant," Penrod slapped Khalid on the shoulder. "Commence firing." Khalid stooped to the crank, and Penrod himself took hold of the twin traverse handles and depressed the barrels so they were aimed down into the struggling confusion of mud-smeared Ansar. The gun jumped, hammered, and shook in Penrod's hands. Not even the bravest could withstand the combined fire of the two Gatlings. It rolled them back until they jammed in the portal of the drain tunnel, then decimated their ranks, piling their bodies like faggots of firewood on that narrow strip of beach. As the survivors staggered through the shallows towards the boats, the bullets kicked foam from the surface around them. When at last they clambered aboard, the heavy bullets splintered the deck timbers and struck down the crew cowering within the hulls. Their blood dribbled out of the bullet holes and trickled down the outside of the hulls like claret spilt from the goblet of a drunkard. With their cargoes of broken bodies on the decks, the dhows steered back across the river in the first flush of day. As the last pulled out of the bight of the harbour, the Gatlings ceased their dreadful clangour. The timid silence of the dawn was marred only by the lamentations of the new widows across the river on the Omdurman bank. Penrod stepped back from the Gatling, whose barrels glowed as though they had been heated in a blacksmith's forge. He looked around him like someone awakening from a nightmare. He was not surprised to find Yakub at his side. "I saw Osman Atalan in the front rank of the enemy host," he told him.
"I saw him also, Lord."
"If he is still on this bank of the river, we must find him," Penrod ordered. "If he is alive, I want him. If he's dead, his head shall be sent to the ever-victorious Mahdi. It may discourage him and his Ansar from another attack on the city." Before he left the redoubt, Penrod called to Sergeant Khalid. "See to our wounded. Get them to hospital." He knew how futile that would be. Both the Egyptian doctors had deserted from Gordon's regiment months ago, but not before they had stolen and sold all the medical supplies. At the hospital building, a few old Arab midwives still treated the wounded with herbs and traditional potions. He had heard that Rebecca Benbrook had tried to teach some of the Sudanese women how to take care of the wounded in a more orthodox fashion, but he knew that she had had no medical training. She could do little more than attempt to staunch bleeding and make sure the wounded had clean boiled water to drink and extra rations of durra and green cake. Before the words were out of his mouth, he heard a scream. He glanced in the direction it had come from and saw a woman dressed in black robes bending over a wounded dervish. The Arab and Nubian women of the city had an instinct for death and loot. The first were arriving even before the crows and the vultures. The wounded dervish wriggled and writhed as the women prodded him into position with the point of her little dagger. Then, with an expert stroke that started at his throat under the ear and raked forward, she opened both his carotid and jugular arteries and hopped back so the blood would not soak her skirts. Long ago, Penrod had learnt not to interfere in this type of business. Arab women were worse than the men, and this one had made no attempt to conceal what she was about. He turned away. "Sergeant, I need prisoners for questioning. Save as many as you can." Then he jerked his head to Yakub. "Come, all-seeing Yakub, let us seek the Emir Osman Atalan. The last I saw of him, he was on the beach trying to rally his men as they ran for the boats."
"Wait for me, Pen. I'm coming with you."
Amber had crept out of the dugout. Once again he had forgotten her presence. Her hair was in tangled disarray, her blue eyes were underscored with plum-coloured bruises, and her yellow frock was filthy with smoke and dust. The revolver was too big for the hand that held it. "Will I never get rid of you?" "You must go home, Amber," he said. "This is no place for you. It never was."
"The streets are not safe," Amber argued. "Not all the dervish got away in the boats. I saw hundreds of them escaping that way."
She waved the Webley in an indeterminate gesture over her shoulder.
"They will be waiting to ravish me or cut my throat."
Ravish was one of her new words, although she was uncertain of its meaning. "Amber, there are corpses and dying men down there. It's no place for a young lady."
"I've seen dead men before," she said sweetly, "and I am not a lady yet, just a little girl. I only feel safe with you."
Penrod laughed a little too harshly. He always felt light-headed and detached from reality when fighting was over.
"Little girl? In stature, perhaps. But you have all the wiles of a fully-fledged member of your sex. I'm no match for you. Come along, then."
They slipped and slid down the bank into the creek. The first rays of the sun were gilding the minarets of the city, and the light improved every minute. Penrod and Yakub moved cautiously among the bullet-torn bodies of the fallen Ansar. Some were still alive, and Yakub leant over one with his dagger poised.
"No,"
Penrod said sharply. Yakub looked aggrieved.
"It would be merciful to help his poor soul through the gates of paradise."
But Penrod indicated Amber and shook his head again even more definitely. Yakub shrugged and moved on. Penrod was looking for Osman Atalan's green turban. As he ducked out under the stone arch of the tunnel onto the muddy beach, he picked it out. It was on the head of a corpse floating face down in the lap and wash of the wavelets at the edge of the bank. Through the clinging folds of the jibba, he saw that the corpse was lean and athletic. There were two bullet holes in its back. The Gatling had inflicted massive damage. He could have thrust his fist into the holes. A few fingerling Nile perch worried the ragged tatters of raw meat that hung from the wounds. The end of the turban floated free, waving like a tendril of seaweed in the wash of the current. Osman Atalan's long, dark hair was entwined with the cloth. Penrod felt his spirits plunge when only moments before he had been intoxicated. He felt cheated and angry. There should have been more to it than this. He had sensed that he and Atalan were caught up together in the ring of destiny. This was no way for it to end. There was no satisfaction in finding his enemy floating like the carcass of a pariah dog in a drainage creek with fish nibbling his flesh. Penrod sheathed his sabre and went down on one knee beside the floating body. With a strangely respectful gesture, he took the dead man's arm and rolled the body face up in the shallows. He stared at it in astonishment. This was an older, less noble face, with brutish brows, thick lips, and broken teeth, stained by the smoke of the hashish pipe. "Osman Atalan has escaped," he spoke aloud in his relief. He was overtaken by a sense of prescience. It was not over yet. Fate had linked him and Atalan, as a serpentine liana binds two great forest trees to each other. There was more to follow, much more. He knew it in his heart. There was a soft sound behind him, but it did not alarm him. He thought it was either Jakob or Amber. He went on studying the features of the dead emir, until Amber screamed, "Pen! Behind you! Look out!" She was some way to his right. Even as he turned, he knew it was not her he had heard so close behind him, and he knew he was too late. Perhaps, after all, this was where it ended, on this strip of mud beside the great river. He completed the turn with his right hand on the hilt of his sabre, rising from his knees, but he knew he could not regain his feet and draw his sword in time. He had only a fleeting glimpse of his assassin. The dervish had been feigning death. It was one of their tricks. Coiled like a poisonous adder, he had waited for his moment. Penrod had fallen into the trap. He had turned his back and sheathed his sabre. The dervish had come to his feet with his broadsword drawn back like a forester about to make the first cut on the trunk of a tree. Now he swung all his wiry frame behind the stroke. He was aiming a few inches above the point of Penrod's left hip bone. Penrod watched the massive silver blade looping towards him, but it seemed that time had slowed. He was like an insect trapped in a bowl of honey, and his movements were sluggish. He realized that the blade would slice through the soft tissue of his midriff until it struck his spinal column just above the pelvic girdle. That would not stop it. The entire circumference of his body would offer as little resistance as if it were the spongy stem of a banana tree. This single stroke of the blade would bisect him neatly. The shot came from his right, a flat blurt of sound, the characteristic report of the Webley .44. Although he was not looking directly at her, Penrod was aware of Amber's small shape at the periphery of his vision. She was holding the weapon double-handed, at the full reach of both her arms, but the heavy recoil threw it high above her head. The assassin was a young man with a thin, unkempt beard, his pockmarked skin the colour of toffee. Penrod was staring at his face as the heavy Webley bullet struck him in the left temple and blasted through his skull just behind the eyes. It distorted his features as though they were an India rubber mask. His lips twisted and elongated, and his eyelids fluttered like the wings of butterflies. His eyes bulged from their sockets, and the bullet erupted from his right temple in a cloud of bone chips and wet tissue. Halfway through the sword stroke, his fingers opened nervelessly, and the weapon flew from his grip. It spun past Penrod's hip, missing it by a handspan, and cartwheeled away to peg point first into the muddy bank. The assassin took a step back before his legs folded, and he collapsed. With his right hand on the hilt of his half-drawn sabre, Penrod turned to stare in amazement at Amber. She dropped the revolver and burst into sobs. He went to her and picked up the Webley, thrust it into the holster on his belt, and buckled the flap. Amber was sobbing as though her heart was breaking. She was shivering, and her lips were quivering wildly as she tried to tell him something. He placed one arm round her shoulders and the other behind her knees and lifted her as though she were an infant. She clung to him with both thin arms round his neck. "That is absolutely enough for one day," he said gently. "This time I shall take you home myself." Gordon was waiting for him in the Gatling redoubt as he came up the bank. "A fair night's work, Ballantyne. The Mahdi will think twice before coming again, and the populace will be much heartened." He lit a cigarette, and his hand was steady. "We will throw the dervish dead into the river, a floating warning to their comrades. Perhaps some may even be carried down through the gorge to our troops coming up river. They will know that we are holding out. It may encourage them to a little more haste." Now he glanced at Amber, who was still weeping silently. Her whole body shook with sobs, but the only sounds were small gulps of breath. "I will take command here. You may escort the young lady back to her family." Penrod carried Amber into the street. She was still weeping. "Cry, if it makes you feel better," he whispered to her. "But by God, you are as brave a little thing as any man I have known." She stopped weeping, but her grip tightened around his neck. By the time he handed her over to Rebecca and Nazira, Amber had cried herself to sleep. They had to prise her arms from around Penrod's neck.